Welcome to Beyond the Loss with your host, Aditi Leverage. Aditi is a certified coach and certified grief recovery specialist, mindfulness meditation teacher, writer, and founder of the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center. Aditi's mission is to help people connect to a variety of healing options so they can heal in their own way on their own terms. And now here is your host, Aditi Leverage.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning back in to Beyond the Loss. Today, we have Aman Dhaliwal with us. Aman Dhaliwal is 29 years old and lives in Calgary. For the past 7 years, Aman has been working with Alberta Justice and loves her career. In her free time, she enjoys photography as well as doing hair and makeup. Aman is the oldest of four, and her family is very close-knit. Her siblings are her best friends. Aman and her husband have been married for 5 years, and they have a 3.5-year-old daughter who keeps them on her toes. When their daughter was 2 years old, they decided they were ready to add another addition to their family. Shortly after Aman became pregnant with their second daughter, but sadly, they lost her just 5 days before her due date due to a cord accident. Aman is currently 9 months post-loss. We're so grateful to have Aman here today. Aman, I have witnessed your grief process from the sidelines, and I think your story and voice will be just such a help for so many others going through this. I would love to hear more of your story, and if you can take us back to what that day and those months were like.
First off, thank you, Aditi, for having me on here and giving me that opportunity to share my story with other lost parents, other lost moms. And hopefully my story will help guide somebody through their grief journey. So this goes back to December 22nd, 2019. It was a regular day, but I felt a little off. Like my belly just felt weird. I felt very agitated and anxious, and I just couldn't put a finger on why I was feeling that way. So, you know, we went through our day. We were at a friend's kid's birthday party, and, you know, at the birthday party, I had some cake, I had some pop, and it was just really weird because normally my baby Severa would move at that point. Like, you know, babies get hyper with sugar. but after like that, like I didn't feel any movement. And I was just like, okay, this is really weird. But, you know, we just went along the day. I'm like, oh, I'm sure everything's fine. Maybe she's getting too big and there's not enough room in there for her to move around. So I didn't really think too much into it, but I was just so tired. And after that birthday party, it was late afternoon, me, my husband, and my daughter, Amaya, we came home. And I told my husband, I'm like, I need to take a nap. I'm like, I'm just feeling off. Like, I want to take a quick nap. So I did for about like an hour and a half-ish. And hoping that, you know, once I wake up, I'll feel better. And then, so when I woke up, I still felt the same, if not worse. And I was like, man, this is really weird. Like, I don't know why I'm feeling this way. Like, I'm so close to having my baby like 5 days before. And the only thing I could have compared it to was my first pregnancy with my daughter, Amaya. So something was off, but I kept faith. I was just like, it's okay. No, it's nothing to worry about. I just had an ultrasound 2 days ago. Like everything's fine. And then that early evening on December 22nd, we went for dinner at my mom's house. And, you know, we had dinner and I was just sitting there in the family room. And I remember mentioning to my mom, like, because my mom's had 4 kids. And I was like, Mom, is it normal to like not feel your baby move? Like at the end, I'm like, something just feels weird. She's like, oh, she's like, I can't remember, but no, you should feel her move. I'm like, I haven't all day. Like, you know, I had sugar, I had pop, like it just didn't make any sense. And then at that point, I told my husband, Sunny, and I was like, Sunny, let's just go to labor and delivery. Let's just go get checked out. Like, I'm sure everything's fine, but I just need that reassurance at this point. because I was giving myself like all this anxiety over it, right? And then he's like, yeah, let's go. But even like leaving like my mom's house, I was like, should we go? Should we not? It's going to take like a couple hours if we're there. And it was like a crazy snowstorm that day. But the end of it, we ended up going. I was like, no, we need to go. So, you know, everything was fine. We just drove to the hospital. We were chatting, everything like totally normal. And then we walk into labor and delivery, and I was just being joyful and happy talking to like the triage nurses. I'm like, hi, you know, I'm sure everything's fine, but I just wanted to come in and get checked out. I just didn't feel my baby move, but yeah, so can you please check me out? And they're like, yeah, no problem. And then the triage nurse took me into like the little check-in room that they have right in triage, and she used a Doppler on my belly. And normally at that point in my pregnancy, like the minute you put the Doppler on my belly, like at all my appointments, you could pick up the heartbeat. But this time she just couldn't. She was like, okay, move this way. Okay, move this way. But I couldn't hear a heartbeat. And like her face was blank, right? And at that point I was like, I started panicking a little bit, but I was still like, it's okay. You know, she's probably in a different position. It's not a big deal. And then the nurse says, well, these Dopplers are dated and sometimes we can't pick it up, but let's just take you into the room and we'll hook you up to the NST machine, the non-stress test, where they can monitor movements and stuff. I was like, okay, yeah, no problem. So I walked over to the room. Sunny and I went in there. They hooked me up to the machine. One nurse comes in. Okay, turn onto your left side, turn onto your right side, turn onto your left side, like repeatedly. And I couldn't hear anything. Like, even if they couldn't pick up the heartbeat, like you would hear your baby move around, because I've had those tests done many times. And but there was nothing. And then that nurse leaves, another nurse comes in, and she's like, I'm just gonna try, you know, maybe it's different hands and we'll just try again. So again, repeatedly moving left right, and I couldn't hear anything. There was no movement. I couldn't hear a heartbeat. And then the doctor comes in and she's like, okay, well, we're just gonna do a bedside ultrasound just to check baby. And at that point, my heart started beating like, oh my God, okay, something's up, because this isn't normal. And, you know, I look at Sunny and he's like, what the hell, like, what's going on? Like, we're just like, okay, none of this is normal. And then, so when they do the ultrasound, again, nothing. And they're like, oh, well, this ultrasound machine is quite old. We're just going to call down to the ultrasound tech and they'll bring in the actual big machine that, you know, they would use when you go in for your regular ultrasound checks. I said, okay, that's fine. And while we're waiting, it felt like a lifetime, even though it was about 20 minutes. And then the ultrasound tech came in and she did the ultrasound, and the whole time she was quiet. There was no expression on her face. And here I am panicking. I'm like, and I remember I was like, super upset. And I'm like, can you just tell me, can you hear a heartbeat? That's all I want to know. I need to know, is there a heartbeat? Do you hear anything? And I repeatedly was saying that to her. And then finally she looked at me. She's like, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. And like my world just crushed at that point. I had a million questions, like what, why, how, like everything was fine. I had no complications. And, you know, she quietly left the room and she's like, you know, your doctor will be here in just a couple of minutes and she'll talk to you. So I think we had about like 5 minutes in between when the tech left and our doctor came. And like, I didn't know what to feel. My body went into a sudden, like instant shock. I'm crying. Sunny's crying. We're like, what just happened? Like, you know, this was the night of December 22nd, and you know, we were just days away from Christmas, just days away from her due date. Like, it was supposed to be the happiest time in our lives. And, you know, the doctor comes in and she sits down and she goes, she's like, I took a look at everything. She's like, I have no medical reason as to why this happened or what happened. She's like, the only way I could get some answers is after we deliver your baby. up until that moment that she said that, it didn't even click into my head that, hey, I mean, you're still going to have to go through like the whole delivery process, you know, like that wasn't like, I didn't even think of that. I just thought, okay, no heartbeat. It's done. Like, that's just how I thought of it. Cause I had never known anybody in my life who lost a baby. And when she said that, I was like, oh man, like I still have to like physically deliver this baby, and I'm just in a shock. And, you know, they're throwing all these like options at you, and you just don't know what is right and what is wrong in that moment. Like, she's like, you can stay and come back later, or you can, like, you can get a C-section, we can induce you, like all these questions. And I didn't know what to do. All I knew in that moment, I was like, I want to go home, because I needed my mom.
Yeah. And all these decisions that you never, ever would have expected to be having to make.
Oh, totally. No one ever thinks about that. And why would we think about that? Like, mm-hmm. that's not how anybody would predict their pregnancy. And like, nobody wants that. So we don't think about that. We don't bring those thoughts into our head. Right. Yeah. But in that moment, I was like, no, I want to go home. I want to go see my mom. I want to go see my daughter. They're like, yeah, that's fine. But once you get home, if you feel like you want to come back, just come back. And then we'll decide what we want to do, if we want to induce you or if you want to proceed with a C-section. So I went home, and, you know, on the drive home, it was so different than the drive to the hospital. Me and Sunny were just silent. We had nothing to say. Like, what do you say to each other at that point? Like, we're both in utter shock. And then we get home, and I tell Sunny, I'm like, why are we home? I'm like, no, we can't be home. We need to go back. Like, what am I going to do here? I can't sleep. I'm not going to be able to get a restful sleep and be like, okay, hey, take me back. I'm like, let's do this. Like, I can't be here. I want to go back. Like, let's do what we need to do. Right. And then, I decided to take a quick shower. So I jumped in the shower. And then when I was in the shower, I was like, you know, I was like touching my belly, you know, I was bawling my eyes. I'm like, this can't be real. Like, Severa, you're there. You're still there. A miracle's going to happen. Like, we're so close to the end, you know? And then, so I got out of the shower, got dressed, packed a few of my things. And then as we were leaving, we saw her diaper bag, and it didn't even clue into Sunny. Sunny just like so innocently like picked it up. He's like, oh, we forgot this. And then I'm like, we're not going to need that, Sunny. He's like, oh shit. Like, that moment we just broke. And we're like, what do we do? Like, how are we going to do this? Like, you know, but we still decided to take an outfit for her that we had in the hospital bag, and her blankie and whatnot, her little hat. And we're like, well, we took that, and because the nurse had told us to bring something if we wanted to like dress her up in and whatnot. So we ended up taking that, and we got back to the hospital. And then once we got there, it was just so different. it just like, I can't even explain that feeling. Like, you just feel so empty. Like, there's no joy, there's no expression, there's nothing. The only emotion you feel is like heartbreak. And then when we walked in onto the unit, everybody there knew why I was there. And, you know, they walked us over to this room, and this room was like very different than any other hospital room I've seen. It was very big. You know, they give you your space for the families to grieve and whatnot. It was like at the end of the hall and super private. And then we go there, and then the medical team, they came into the room, and they asked what we had decided. And at this point, I think it's only been like a couple hours since we were just told there was no heartbeat, right? And then, so in the room, they're like, so do you want to be induced? And then, you know, go through natural labor and whatnot, or a C-section. And I opted for the C-section, because it was already, that's what we had decided throughout my pregnancy. Cause my first one was a C-section. So I just opted for a scheduled C-section this time. So I was like, no, I can't put my body through that physical trauma and physically like push my baby out. I couldn't do it. I was not in the right mental state. You can say at that point, I was just like overcome with so much grief and confusion. So I told them, I'm like, no, I'm okay. We'll do the C-section. And then another question I was asked was, do I want to be awake or put under? At first I was like, no, put me under. I don't want to be awake for any of this. But then later I decided, I was like, no, I want to be awake. Like it was so hard to like make those decisions in that moment, because you don't know what's right and what's wrong or what you should do or what you shouldn't do. Like it's just so much at once, right? And so we opted for the C-section. And then the next, because this is like now we're into December 23rd, like early hours of the morning, like between 1 and 3-ish, I would say. And then around 9 a.m., they came to like kind of prep me for the C-section. And it was about 11 o'clock when me and Sunny, we walked over to the OR room. And when we walked into there, it was so different because, you know, with my first pregnancy, we're all excited and, you know, we go in there. It's like, yay. This time we still had to go there. Sunny still had to get dressed up in that suit you have to wear, but it was just so different. Like, so we get in there and, you know, they give me the spinal tap and I'm laying on the table and I'm just staring at the ceiling. Like, I'm like, how is this even real? Like, how is this a dream? Like, this has to be a nightmare because I've never known anybody or anything, any experience like this prior to it. Right. And then the nurse told me that once they deliver the baby, they'll have more answers. They suspected a cord incident, but they couldn't say for sure until they actually saw Severa. And then once Severa was out, the nurse came on the other side of the curtain and she said, I'm sorry, the cord was wrapped around her neck tightly 2 times. So, and at that point, like I was just crushed. And normally, you know, you hear, like you look forward to that cry once your baby's born. It was just pure silence in that OR, like just silent. And they asked me if I wanted to see her. And at that point I told Sunny, I was like, Sunny, can you go on the other side of the curtain? I want you to describe everything, like how she looks, her color, like everything, just so I have a mental picture before I see her, because I didn't know if I was going to be able to see her. And then he told me, he's like, she looks like a perfectly normal baby. She looks like she's sleeping. Like her skin's pink, just a little purple, but she's perfect. Like there's nothing wrong with her. If you were to see her, you would think she's just sleeping. And then the nurse dressed her up and brought her over to me. And oh man, I can't even put into words how I felt, what the thoughts that were going through my head at that point. Like it was horrible. After the C-section, we got back to our room and I didn't even know that you're allowed to spend time with your baby. I didn't know if I could even hold her. Like I did not thought, okay, they take her out and that's it, right? Like they showed her to me and that was it. But once we got back into the room, the nurses explained to me that they have this thing, it's called a cuddle cot, which is essentially a cold bassinet, which preserves the baby's body longer so that families have time to hold their baby and, you know, make those memories as long as they can. So I was so grateful for that, because for the 2 days I was at the hospital, I got to hold her. I got to take pictures with her, took pictures of her. My family got to visit her. So in that sense, like I'm happy that we did get that time, but it was overwhelming at the same time. Like I remember, like they would bring her to me and then I would press the button to call the nurse and I'd be like, I can't do this. Can you please take her away? And then 5 minutes later, I'd press the button again. And I did that, gosh, so many times the whole time I was there, like every like 10, 15 minutes, I wanted her, but then I couldn't have her. It was just a whirlwind of emotions. And I think the hardest part of those days there was deciding if I was going to allow my, at that time, my 2-year-old Amaya to come see Severa. She knew mommy had a baby in her belly. We prepped her the whole pregnancy, you know, teaching her, oh yeah, you're going to have to share. If baby's crying, we have to whisper, like teaching her all those things, trying to prepare her. And now all of a sudden there's nothing. Like, how do I explain that to my child? And so I didn't know what the right or wrong answer to that was. I didn't want to traumatize my child because it was hard for me to see Severa. How is my 2-year-old going to react? I had no idea. And so what I did was I contacted, while I was in the hospital, her preschool teachers. And I was like, what do you suggest from like a professional standpoint? Like, is this going to be okay? Or like, I just want someone else's opinion at that point, right?
Yes.
And what they said, they're like, essentially, it's totally your decision. This is so personal. Like, you guys do what you need to do. But from like a professional standpoint, what kids don't see, they can essentially miss. She can miss the idea of baby in mommy's belly, but if I show her Severa and get her to personally meet her, like, how is that going to affect her? I don't know. So we made that hard decision at that time, which we, you know, was the right decision for our family and for us, was that we chose not to bring Amaya to the hospital, not let her see Severa, because I didn't know how I was going to answer the questions. Why, mommy, why isn't baby crying? Or why can't we take her home? Like, how am I supposed to answer that? She's so young and this is so new to me. Like, it, so that was the decision we made. And honestly, I'm happy with that decision, because Amaya still has a beautiful memory of Severa, and she didn't have to physically see her, because I think that would have been a lot harder. Amaya's similar to me. We're very emotional. I can already sense she's an empath like me, and it would have just been so much more difficult for her too. Just being confused and understanding that.
And that's not an easy decision to make, but I like that you said, you know, this was the decision that felt right for your family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Like, even after, like, there were days I'm like, should I have let her meet her? Like, you know, you go back to all the what ifs, like, you know, like, is she gonna hate me in the future for this? Or, you know, like, I don't know. But in that moment, that was what felt right and what we ended up doing. And then I kept telling the nurses that I need to be home for Christmas morning. I still had to be a mom, and I still wanted to give Amaya that Christmas that she anticipated, right? So they were like, as soon as you're up and walking, you know, you can be discharged Christmas morning. So the minute I felt my toes after the C-section, I was up and walking. I was like, can you please bring me a walker? I wanted to be up and moving around as soon as I could. And, you know, Christmas morning, they came to do like a final check, and they said, okay, you're discharged. They gave us a few moments with Severa at that point. And I didn't even know that I was going to get a memory box. They brought me this box, and it had Severa's teddy bear, the clothes we put on her, her blanket, her footprints, handprints, a lock of her hair, just all these like little memory type items in this box. And just like that, we walked out of the hospital without our baby, but with a memory box. And just walking out, it just was the hardest thing as parents, leaving your child. And you know what I mean? Like, it just, it was hard.
Yes, I just thank you so much, Amin, for sharing your story and sharing your daughter with us. And you continue to stand up and to speak and to ensure that this world, although we didn't get to meet her, that we all know her. And I think that that's such a powerful thing to do in her memory and in your own process of grieving. I know it's not easy, but I truly admire how you have shown up over the last 9 months during this process.
It hasn't been easy, but what I did find was like, I would find joy when I share her. And when I do share everything, I try to be as raw and authentic as I can, because there's no sugarcoating anything when it comes to loss. Like, you know what I mean? It is what it is. It's harsh, it's raw, it's painful, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, you really have to just sit with all those emotions. And I feel like once you sit with all those emotions and you're at the very bottom, that's the only after that is when you can start like your healing process. You can start to rise after that, because you have to feel it all, because it's all so real.
Yes, you do. You have to feel it all. And for our listeners, we're recording this episode about 6 days after John Legend and Chrissy Teigen unfortunately lost their baby boy, Jack. And Chrissy Teigen tweeted saying, "Driving home from the hospital with no baby, how can this be real?" And I heard similar sentiment from you.
Oh, 100%. I felt that. I felt that so much when I read that post.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, how, when you heard the news, were you just brought right back to that moment of leaving the hospital without Sabera?
Oh, for sure. Like, when I first found out about that news, it took me back to my own personal experience with loss, but took me back to December 22nd when we found out there was no heartbeat. And, you know, like, in a way, reading her story and her, like, what happened, and then, you know, you read all the comments that are under their post and whatnot. After reading that, it hit me like, holy, this is such a big deal. This is nothing small. Just because we are not celebrities, we are regular people, it doesn't diminish that pain. It's the same. And reading all those comments and everything that people, you know, how sorry they were, and it just amplified all of my feelings, I guess you can say. Like, just because I'm a regular person, I felt that same thing. So obviously my pain is real, and it was so big, and it is so big, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it will continue to be there. And I agree. Whenever there's celebrities that lose, I'm, you know, I feel for them. But what I'm most grateful for is they bring the conversation out front, so that all of us parents who are experiencing this on a, like, in the shadows, so to speak, we know that we're not alone. And the outpouring of love to Chrissy and John, I feel like that outpouring of love, we all feel it as bereaved parents.
Oh, for sure. 100%. 100%.
I did want to just ask you briefly about, so you are Punjabi. And I just wanted to ask you if your, like, cultural identity, how that intersected with your experience of moving through the grief of Sabera.
So I found that, unfortunately, there was not a lot of support within our community. I found when I came home, and even, you know, just days after my loss, leading up to the funeral, and even after that, there were some people who thought, why are you even having a funeral? Your child didn't even live. And there were some people that had said, oh, it was a girl, it's okay, next time God will give you a boy. Like, how, there's no help in that. There's no support in that. There were some people who didn't even come to the funeral because they thought it was a joke. There were people on my social media who's seen my post. Like I said, from the beginning, I was as raw and as authentic as I could be. And, you know, there were people who had messaged and called and said, oh, you shouldn't be making posts like that. They're very depressing.
Mm, yeah. And you're like, yeah, I know.
Depressed. I'm like, this is my life. This is what I just went through. I'm sorry it's an inconvenience to you. If you don't like it, then kindly unfollow me, you know? But this is who I am. And I found, like, it was just so hard. Like, people just kind of wanted you to brush it under the rug and just move on. Like, stop talking about her. It's, you know, and with that, there were some relationships that were lost within the family, within my friend circle. There were relationships lost because people didn't like your grief. You know what I mean? Like, it was inconvenient to them. It was, they didn't know how to handle it, so they shut you out. And then in those moments, it makes you feel so lonely. Like, here I am trying to be as, like I said, as raw as I could be, trying to share my story in hopes that it will help someone else feel less alone, because I felt alone. But then there are people in your own community, essentially in your own family and friend circle, who try to diminish that and make you feel even smaller when you're already feeling so shitty and small.
And I think people don't realize how our cultural identities really influence how we process and move through grief. And as you know, that's something at the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center we talk about a lot, right? The diversity and experiences of people who have gone through this. And so you have recently joined our board, yay, which I'm so, so happy about. And just feel so blessed to have you. Can you just briefly share what called you to join our board?
Honestly, I found so much support from the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Center after my loss. Because like I said, there wasn't really a lot of support in my own community for me. So I reached outwards. I reached social media. I found out about the center. I attended some meetings prior to COVID. And, you know, I felt like that's where I belonged. I felt like that's where I was understood. That's where I got support and I could be myself. I didn't have to put on a face and act like I'm okay when I wasn't okay. And I want to be that for someone else. And that's what inclined me to essentially, you know, come work with the center, come join the board, because I feel like there's so much support that is needed out there. And so many women are like suffering in silence because of the community, and people don't understand loss. People don't understand grief. And, you know, God bless the people who haven't had to deal with grief and loss in their lives. But for the ones that do, it's not easy. It's hard. And we need support. The only way we're going to get through it is if we support each other.
Yes, I 100% agree. And so like I said, I'm super blessed that you have joined our board and that you continue to share your story and Savera's light with us and the world. If there was something that you wanted somebody very new into this journey to know, kind of like if I knew then what I know now, what would that be?
I would honestly say, feel all your feelings. Don't put on a brave face for anybody, because what you're going through is real. You're allowed to feel sad. You're allowed to feel heartbroken. You're allowed to feel not okay, because everything that happened was not okay. And to reach out, there are so many supports out there, even if you don't find that support within your own circle of family and friends. There is a circle out there. There's so much support, and we're here to help. Don't ever feel alone, and just take it one day at a time, because you're going to have good days and bad days. And when some days you're going to feel like, oh, I'm perfectly fine. And then the next morning you'll wake up and it'll feel like a grief wave hit you. But feel all of that. And don't forget that there is so many people out here who are willing to help and be there for you and listen to you.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Amin. You move me to tears with your love and your light and your strength and your compassion. And I'm just so very blessed to know you. And I feel very blessed that our listeners got to hear your story. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about the uncomfortableness that is in later term loss. I don't think we talk about later term loss enough. And unfortunately, it happens, and with your strength and your voice, we can really start to help people understand that there's other people and other families like them. And so I thank you so much for coming on. I thank everybody for listening, and I look forward to for you to tune in again on Beyond the Loss.
Aditi has personally navigated the complex journey after pregnancy and infant loss. Through both her personal and professional journey, she found that there were more supports needed to holistically serve the loss community in Calgary. To fill this gap, Aditi founded Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center. If you would like to find out more about the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center, please go to www.pregnancyinfantlosssupportcenter.com. Thank you for listening. For more episodes, please visit www.getyouvisible.com/podcast.